told him, "We have seen the Lord." But he said to them, "Unless I see the nail marks in his hands and put my finger where the nails were," let me read that again. But he said to them, "Unless I see the nail marks in his hands and put my finger where the nails were and put my hand into his side, I will not believe it." A week later, his disciples were in the house again, and Thomas was with them. Though the doors were locked, Jesus came and stood among them and said, "Peace be with you." Then he said to Thomas, "Put your finger here. See my hands. Reach out your hand and put it into my side. Stop doubting and believe." Thomas said to him, "My Lord and my God." Then Jesus told him, "Because you have seen me, you have believed. Blessed are those who have not seen and yet have believed." Jesus did many other miraculous signs in the presence of his disciples, which are not recorded in this book, but these are written that you may believe that Jesus is the Christ, the Son of God, and that by believing you may have life in his name. Now go down in chapter 21, the next chapter, to verse 18. Chapter 21, verse 18 of the Gospel of John. Jesus has appeared. This is his third time appearing to the disciples, and he's talking with Peter and John as they walk along. Jesus says, "I tell you the truth. When you were younger, you dressed yourself and went where you wanted, but when you are old, you will stretch out your hands, and someone else will dress you and lead you where you do not want to go." That was directed toward Peter. Now, verse 19. Jesus said this to indicate the kind of death by which Peter would glorify God. Then he said to him, "Follow me." Peter turned and saw that the disciple whom Jesus loved was following them. This was the one who had leaned back against Jesus at the supper and had said, "Lord, who is going to betray you?" When Peter saw him, he asked, "Lord, what about him?" Jesus answered, "If I want him to remain alive until I return, what is that to you? You must follow me." Because of this, the rumor spread among the brothers that this disciple would not die. But Jesus did not say that he would not die. He only said, "If I want him to remain alive until I return, what is that to you?" This is the disciple who testifies to these things and who wrote them down. We know that his testimony is true. Here ends our reading. There's a response of thankfulness that's printed for you in your bulletins. The word of the Lord.
Thanks be to God.
Thanks indeed. Let's pray. As we work through the Gospel of John, we're using these passages, both Palm Sunday last week from the Gospel of John, and now these passages from John about Resurrection Sunday and Jesus' appearance to his disciples, and the physicality of the appearance to the disciples. Jesus was not just spiritually resurrected. He did not appear and he was as some kind of ghost or apparition, but rather physically he was resurrected from the grave. He was not there in the tomb. His body was not there in the tomb when Mary and the other women and Peter and John went to see Jesus there on Sunday morning. And when Jesus appears to his disciples, he is very clear to them to have them experience that he has in body risen from the dead. This is clearly a part of Christian teaching. It's something that's distinct among Christianity, that the physical is good. It's just been marred and affected by sin. We read in Genesis 1 that all the physical stuff that God creates, God calls good. Often in religions, it was true in the Greek religion and Greek philosophical ideas of Jesus' day, that the body and the physical was bad and that the spiritual was good. You can get that in the church today too sometimes, but certainly in other religions, the idea that just the soul or just the spirit is good, but God redeems not only our souls, but our bodies. And we will be resurrected bodily one day, just as Jesus was. Jesus' resurrection is called by Paul the first fruits of those who rise from the dead. First fruits were those first grains in the field that were ripe. And so Jesus is the first physical resurrection of many more to come. But as we look at this passage, we note a few things about it. And what John's point is in bringing these things up in particular. As we've gone through John, if you've been here the last 4 weeks or whatever it's been, however many weeks we've been in here, you've heard before that John, you know, knew he was writing a gospel book that was the fourth. Probably all his readers were aware of the other three gospel books. I think, like the early church documents that we have, say Matthew was first. That hasn't been popular in modern unbelieving scholarship, which usually gives Mark the first priority. But Matthew is probably first, and as early church history says, written to Antioch. I think Paul saw it in Antioch as he was about to be sent off on his first missionary journey in Acts 13. Makes sense that God would write the gospel Matthew, a gospel written to Jewish people, first. And then we have Luke written in about AD 60, as Luke is with Paul in Paul's first imprisonment in Acts 28. And then Mark, the early church reports, was written, basically Peter was dictating to Mark. And Mark finished the gospel, early church history, those who were back there during that time, that Mark finished the gospel shortly after Peter was crucified, as it's reported to us, upside down. At the hand of Nero, shortly before Nero's death in June of 68, sorry. I was thinking Beatles there. June of 68, and so Mark finishes that gospel off. So we have three gospels, you know, that are coming to us much earlier, say a 46 for Matthew, a 60 for Luke, and a 68 for the Gospel of Mark. And here John is writing in about AD 90. So he's writing much later, and he's writing about things that weren't covered yet. And so it makes sense that when we look at the Gospel of John, it's greatly different, not in conflict with, but greatly different than the first three Gospels, because the people he's writing to already had the first three Gospels. And so why plagiarize? Why tell them something they already knew? And so he covers different things and gives different angles, but he also is writing to a different group of people. And he's writing to Jewish Christians who now were in danger in the Roman Empire because they wouldn't give worship to Domitian, the Roman Caesar, who was demanding worship as God from all people in his kingdom unless they belonged to a licensed religion. Jews were a part of a licensed religion, so they were exempted from having to give worship to Caesar. But Jewish Christians were not, because they were Christians. And so John writes, as you see there at the end of chapter 20, that the Jewish Christians would be convinced that the Christ was Jesus. The long-awaited king, the anointed one, was Jesus, and that they would not stray from this. And so John writes even this resurrection account so that they would be assured and confident in their faith, that they should be looking for no other king. And just as David would say of his own physical life, that God will not abandon me to the grave, which David as king meant I will not be defeated in battle. For Jesus, that would mean, as Peter would say in Acts chapter 2, that Jesus would not be left to the grave physically forever, but just for 3 days. And so John writes that there would be confidence, even in the face of persecution, that these people would not abandon their faith in Jesus as the Christ, the King that God had sent to them. So if you'd like to fill out blanks in an outline, just an introductory thing here for you. just note that Christianity has very much placed in its center that Jesus is eternal God, who in history became man and a son of David, not just an ordinary man, but descended from David, to be the final anointed king. That is the Christ, the anointed king, the one anointed to be king, as Jesus was by John the Baptist, of all God's people. And then as we look at John, and why does John give this resurrection account, which is very extensive, it's because, next line for you there, the final proof of Jesus being the Christ was his resurrection from the dead. The final proof of Jesus being the Christ, the anointed king, the one that God had chosen to be king forever over his people, the Son of Man of Daniel 7, 13 and 14, was his resurrection from the dead. This was a showing, the resurrection, that the Father himself approved of Jesus and continued to be pleased with him. Just as the Father had declared at Jesus' baptism, "This is my Son." Now that was true. He was divine Son, second person of the Trinity. It was also true in the human sense, because God called the Son of David his Son, whoever that Son of David was reigning over the throne. God declares that this anointing of Jesus by John the Baptist, "This is my Son in whom I am well pleased." But this continues to be the case. Jesus lives his whole life, and then after his life is over, he is still pleasing to the Father, and the Father raises him from the dead. And that's part of what's going on here. John 5:22, John had recorded Jesus saying, "Moreover, the Father judges no one, but has entrusted all judgment to the Son, that all may honor the Son just as they honor the Father." He has given him authority to judge because he is the Son of Man. And so God raised Jesus from the dead to be this, in Israel, the final judge was the king. So think of Solomon and the two women who both had the child, and the one rolls over and suffocates her child during the night, but then claims, switches the babies around, and they come before Solomon. And David had been judge, final judge, Supreme Court, and that's the role of a king, where there's a kingdom. And so Jesus is given this kingly role, and Jesus refers to this in John 5:22, John 5:27 as well, that he is a king and judge, an eternal judge at final judgment, that all would honor the Son, that they'd have to come before him. Jesus said in John 6:27 that the Father had set upon him, Jesus, his seal of approval. Jesus' words in John 6:27, "The Father has set upon me his seal of approval." Therefore, upon his death, he says there, he would go to the Father. So Jesus had predicted his going to the Father as proof that he was pleasing to the Lord and that he was this chosen king for God's people. So for us, God exhorts us this morning to, number one, as God exhorted through John in the first century to these Jewish Christians who were being tempted to abandon Christ as their king. He exhorts us to, here's your number one, believe strongly. Believe strongly. Be full of faith. Be faithful. When he says here in this passage, stop doubting. Look at the end of verse 27. He says to Thomas, "Stop doubting and believe." It's the etymology, the word background of those is, stop being without faith and be full of faith. Stop doubting and believe. And that's an exhortation to us. That's why this is here, to those who might doubt that Jesus is the Christ. Those who might abandon that Jesus is the Christ because of the mockery that it earns us. We won't lose our lives for not declaring that Joe Biden is God. an equivalent to today doing that with Domitian. But we will be made fun of. We will have people not be our friends when they find out we believe the Bible is true and that Jesus is risen and that he's alive. And Jesus' exhortation to us is the exhortation that he gives to Thomas. Don't be without faith that I'm alive, that I'm at the right hand of God and reigning as king. But be full of faith. Believe. Believe strongly, as we put it here. Believe strongly that Jesus is the Christ, the Father's chosen king. Those are your blanks there. That Jesus is the Christ, the anointed one, the Father's chosen king, who is alive and enthroned today in heaven. So verse 27, again, he says, stop doubting and believe. Verse 29 in this passage, blessed are those who have not seen and yet have believed. Get that. Think a bit about this book being written in AD 90. None of these people to whom John was written had seen Jesus resurrected from the dead. And this exhortation, this encouragement from Jesus is that they were blessed. Even though they were being persecuted, they were blessed because they were believing and they had not seen. John was the only one left, probably, who had seen Jesus resurrected. And so we saw that in verse 21. You know, John was clearing up or chapter 21. John was clearing up the record. It could be that Jesus comes back before I die, but Jesus didn't say that. He just said, what is it to you, Peter? I want to keep John around until I die. And he mentions that rumor had gone around that John would not die. And John was, still alive in AD 90. And it looks like he was alive until about AD 96 or 97 as well. But the exhortation here is to believe strongly that Jesus is the Christ, the Father's chosen king, who is alive and enthroned today in heaven. John writes his gospel, look at verse 31 of chapter 20. He writes his gospel to prove this point. The whole book, he gets almost to the end of it. Chapter 20, verse 31. And he says, I write this that you might believe that Jesus is the Christ. And that's important because if you believe this, then you have life. You have life. Okay, so believe this strongly. Don't waver. A, in your outline there. This is important because God blesses now and eternally only those in the kingdom of his son, Jesus, the king. It's very important that you believe this, that Jesus is ascended king, ascended to his throne at the right hand of God. This means you're part of his kingdom. This means Philippians 3:20, that you have your citizenship in heaven. That's what Paul says about Christians, that we're citizens of heaven. Why citizens of heaven? Because heaven is where Jesus is sitting as enthroned king. And it's the history of God's people that the king, the David and his sons, the king was the conduit through which God blessed his people. When the people didn't have a king, they were in a state of being cursed, like in the book of Judges, where they're oppressed by various peoples. Or when they don't have a king and they're off in exile in Babylon, they're in this state of being cursed, the covenant curse of exile, the worst of all covenant curses from Deuteronomy 28 and Leviticus 26. God blesses only those who are in his son's kingdom. This is why Jesus comes on the scene and says, hear the good news. The kingdom of God is at hand. And he invites all to be a part of it. He's been anointed as king by John the Baptist. And then he announces this kingdom and that people can be a part. And Jews knew what this meant. If I'm a part of the kingdom, with God's king over me, I will be blessed. And only those people. So verse 29, he says, blessed are those who believe. He had said in John 14:6, I am the way and the truth and the life. No one comes to the Father but through me. So if you're part of some other kingdom, or as scripture puts it, when it divides it in two for our age, if you're part of the kingdom of the world, you don't get to the Father. One only gets to the Father through me, through being a citizen in my kingdom. That's John 14, 6. Psalm 72 we looked at a couple of weeks ago, and it's David's psalm where he is rejoicing at the inauguration of his son Solomon as king, there in 1 Kings 1. And he and the people rejoice because Solomon is a righteous king who will judge righteously and fairly, and he'll protect the poor and the oppressed and those who don't have anyone to protect them, like widows and orphans. And because Solomon reigns and is a righteous king, the fields will be fruitful. Even the mountains will be growing fruit and crops on them. This is the picture of what it's like when there's a righteous king and you're in his kingdom. There's abundance and prosperity for you. That's Psalm 72. But you got to be in Solomon's kingdom, in the kingdom of the Son of David, to experience this blessing. Reigns in this season, fruitfulness, prosperity, and for us in this life, prosperity of soul is only through Jesus. You saw in John 5:24 in your declaration of the gospel. Look at that there. Go ahead and look at the front page of your worship guide there. Jesus says, "I tell you the truth, whoever hears my word and believes him who sent me," that is, as Jesus spoke, Jesus talked in another place and said, "I only speak the words the Father tells me to speak." So when he says, whoever hears my word, he's essentially hearing the Father's word. That's why he says, and believes him who sent me, believes the Father, has eternal life and will not be condemned. He has crossed over from death to life. In other words, if you don't believe that I'm the king and that the kingdom of God has arrived, you're still in death. You will be condemned. You've not crossed over from death to life. So this is an important thing for us or anybody today to believe that Jesus is the king, because you need to be in Jesus' kingdom to be blessed by God now and eternally. So believe strongly on this, even though no one living today has seen the risen Jesus. You see, that was the kind of half rebuke for Thomas. You believe, and that's good. Now, don't be too hard on Thomas. Notice here in this passage, Jesus showed the other disciples his hands and his side. That's why I reread that passage for you, that verse, because Thomas had heard that Jesus had been there and showed them, the other 10, his hands and his side. And so Thomas, you can look there in verse 27, verse 25. Thomas said to the rest of the disciples, "Unless I see the nail marks, which you guys did, and put my finger where the nails were and put my hand into his side, I will not believe it." So don't be too hard on Thomas there. The disciples believed after they saw. Now, there's an exception there. We read earlier, Bob read for us, that John, when he was at the empty tomb, saw the grave clothes and believed. So he's maybe the exception there of one who didn't see Jesus before he believed in the resurrection. But this is an exhortation for us to believe strongly, even though we haven't seen the risen Jesus. Just like in AD 90, it was an exhortation to them. I know John's saying, "I know you haven't seen like I saw," but Jesus said, "Blessed are you if you believe without seeing." So even though none living today has seen the risen Jesus, and even though so many don't believe, that's your other blank there. Even so many don't believe. And that was the issue for Jewish Christians during the first century. Most of the Jews hadn't believed. Read the book of Acts. You see, most of the Jews don't believe. Paul goes to the synagogues and only a little percentage believes. And then they're cast out of the synagogue. And so the question is for a Jewish person who's believed in Jesus is, have I been crazy for believing in Jesus? Because if we're in a democracy here about who's the king, who's the anointed one, who's the chosen one of God, the majority has spoken and they've said Jesus is not the Christ, the Son of God. But John is saying he is, but many don't believe. And so that's the case for us today. You know, we could look, any of us as Christians, obviously. I mean, even on Easter Sunday, the church is by far the minority of people in the United States. Most people are home right now or out shopping. Okay. And so believe strongly anyway, even though many don't believe. Mary Magdalene, her female companions, the disciples, including Peter and John, or including Peter, hadn't believed at first. Even John didn't believe at first. When he gets the report from Mary that the tomb was empty, John doesn't know what's going on, so even he runs because he doesn't believe at first and goes and sees the tomb. The rest of the disciples, minus Thomas, saw Jesus and believed. Thomas believed after he saw. But we are called as people, and as we share the gospel, we're calling other people to believe even though we don't see. And don't think it'd be great if Jesus appeared, then people would believe. Remember Luke 16, and there's the rich man and Lazarus, and the rich man goes and he's in hell. He dies, and the poor man, the beggar Lazarus, dies too, and he's in heaven at Abraham's side. And there's this hypothetical situation that Jesus brings up where the rich man in hell is talking to Abraham in heaven. And he says, Abraham, send someone back from the dead to tell my relatives so that they'll know. And Jesus' conclusion at the end of Luke 16 is no, even if someone rises from the dead, they still will not believe. Get it? The disciples got it after all this, but they didn't get it when Jesus was saying this. And so Jesus knew everybody would be called to believe without seeing. Only a few people, a little over 500 as we look at the scriptures, saw Jesus in his physically resurrected state. So believe strongly, even though no one living today has seen Jesus, and even though most living today don't believe. Believe strongly anyway. Now see, believe, again, strongly. Believe strongly on this. Understand that faith has always been a thing that is of spiritual and not physical sight. That's always been the case, that belief, saving faith, is always a thing of spiritual sight, not physical sight. Now, in the book of John, is where we've just gotten into it, but we'll see that John is doing this all through his book. He's contrasting a physical thing with a spiritual thing. And so John 6, you've got physical manna, and you had that in the wilderness with Moses. He says, but I am the real manna, the true manna, the bread from heaven that this physical manna represented. Nicodemus, John chapter 3. Okay, Nicodemus, you were born physically, but you need to be born spiritually from above. The woman at the well, she says, well, give me, you know, this water to drink, physical water. And Jesus says, you don't want physical water. If you knew who you were talking to, you would ask me for living water. And you would drink of it and be thirsty no more. And so John is doing this all through. And then you saw what Bob read for us this morning in John 9. And Jesus talks about sight specifically. And John spends chapter 8 and all of chapter 9 on this one incident. It's one of the differences with the Gospel of John. His stories last like a long time. And Jesus' interactions with people in the other gospels are like 8 verses. But in John, it's like a chapter, you know, a woman at the well, it's huge. And the blind man that he heals in the temple, it's a huge thing. But Jesus emphasizes, he goes to the man and the man has been healed And the man believes, but he doesn't know because he was physically blind. He doesn't know he's talking to. Now that he can see, he doesn't know who he's talking to. And Jesus says, do you believe in the Son of Man, which is shorthand for the King? And we'll talk about that in weeks in the future. Do you believe in the Son of Man? Do you believe in the King, the Son of David? Jesus says, it is he who is speaking to you. Because the man said, tell me who he is that I might believe in him. Jesus says, he who is speaking to you. And the response of the man is, Lord, I believe. And he worships Jesus. Get the picture. Thrown out of the temple, this blind man. This was John's readers. Thrown out of the synagogues. Thrown out of the temple. Disowned by the Jews in front of the Romans so that they no longer could hide under a licensed religion as they had been doing for the first 50 years as the church. But now they're believing in this Son of Man, and they have spiritual sight. And so Jesus goes on and says that sight is a thing that's spiritual. He says, this is why I came into the world. Okay, John 9, as he talks in front of this blind man who can now see in front of the Pharisees. And he says, that those who were blind physically now have sight spiritually. This man has spiritual sight now, physical sight too, but spiritual sight. Because he's recognized that Jesus is the Son of Man, the King, and he's bowed down and worshiped him as divine Son of God, as well as King. But Jesus says, but those who do see physically, you're spiritually blind. And it's revealed that you are, because here I am, God himself, the King before you, and you're rejecting me. So know this, that as many people around you today don't believe, it's a thing of spiritual sight. And that Jesus is the one who gives sight, just like he gave sight to this man born blind in John chapter 9. Jesus is the light of the world. Again, physical light, spiritual light. Okay? Jesus is the light of the world, and he gives light to a person's eyes. Or as Jesus put it in John 5, the Father has granted to me to have life in myself, and I give that life to whom I am pleased to give it. John 5:21. And so recognize that as many, many people don't believe, as most people don't believe in the world, it's not because of a fault on your part. It's because they're still blind. And blindness is a thing that is spiritual. And only Jesus gives sight. Only he gives life. So people are disbelieving, not because they know more than you. They're disbelieving because they're spiritually blind. You can see that this, well, maybe all of you can see. Bob, is this yellow? you can see that there's a TV here. But if there's a blind person here and they say, there's a TV to my right, they can't see it. And they may call me a fool. What do you mean there's a TV? This is a bowling alley. And so that's something we're to realize as believers, that most people don't believe. Most people won't believe. But this is because sight is a spiritual thing. And that's something that Jesus gives to those whom he is pleased to give it. John 5:21. So believe strongly, knowing that sight, knowing that this knowledge that Jesus, this belief that Jesus is the King, is a spiritual thing. And then D, believe strongly on this, that Jesus is the Christ, the King. Having thought about this thing from this passage that we've read this morning in John chapter 20, having thought about this, these disciples, here's your blank, saw, these disciples, these 11, saw Jesus resurrected. And they went from hiding behind a locked door. John emphasizes this. He includes this. He doesn't just say they were somewhere or in a house. He said they're in a locked door, behind a locked door. They're afraid for their lives. And he says it there. Here's why the door was locked. It wasn't we were afraid of a burglary. He says we were locked for, what's it say there? Do you see it? Fear of the Jews. Okay, again, think about the original audience receiving this book in 1890. Fear of the Jews. A Jewish person saying he believes in Jesus. Make him bow down to the emperor, knowing that you wouldn't and that you would lose your life for it. But John makes this point that these disciples go from being afraid of the Jews, not even the Romans. The Romans were the ones with swords and spears and armor. But these disciples were afraid of the Jews. Okay? They go from hiding to publicly proclaiming. That's your blank there. They go from hiding to publicly proclaiming the resurrection. And when you look through the book of Acts, this is chief in what is proclaimed in the sermons that we have recorded in the book of Acts. This is what Paul proclaims before Agrippa and Festus and Felix, the resurrection. By the way, he doesn't tell them how to govern Rome better. He uses his time with civil authorities to talk about Jesus and the resurrection. And they say, well, Paul, we think you've lost your mind talking about the resurrection. But they go from hiding to publicly proclaiming the resurrection, and all continued proclaiming the resurrection, though it cost them all their lives, excepting John. Now get this, this book, Gospel of John, is written in AD 90. These people know that all 10 disciples, except for John, had lost their lives to the Roman government, had been crucified or killed publicly for their proclaiming the resurrection. Okay, so if you're receiving the Gospel of John hot off the press, hot off of John's hand, you know that this group that you're reading about in John chapter 20, everyone except the one who had written it to you, John, they all lost their lives for proclaiming the resurrection. And none of them said, just kidding, to save their lives. And all of them could have. Well, we didn't really, I mean, that's what I'm just telling the people. But really, I don't believe that. So they could go free and continue on living. But all of them die a martyr's death. All of them died because why? They saw this and they touched Jesus and they put their hand in his side and put their finger in his hand and they said, do to me what you want. I'm not going to say that this is not my foot. This is my foot. And if you're going to make me say this is not my foot, well, I'm just not going to lie. But they said, you can tell me you're going to kill me if I say Jesus wasn't resurrected physically from the dead, but he was. So do to me what you will. See, and they had confidence, and they didn't care about dying either, because Jesus died and he was raised from the dead, so they knew that it would be the same thing for them too. I think this is the strongest argument for the resurrection. That the disciples go from being very timid, foolish people, which the Gospels show them all to be, timid and foolish, not understanding. The Gospels are not shy. Matthew's not shy about showing this about them. Peter's not shy about showing this about himself as he dictates to Mark. John's not shy about showing this about himself. So the disciples go and they proclaim from AD 30 to AD 97 that Jesus was resurrected from the dead physically, and they were all, without exception, willing to lose their lives over this proclamation. Confident that their death on this earth did not mean their death forever. Confident of what Jesus said in John 11:25. that Jesus is the resurrection and the life, and he who believes in me, though he die, yet shall he live. So they said, kill me. I'm okay with that, because I will live. Because I believe in Jesus is the resurrection and the life. And all those who believe that he is the Christ have life in his name. So you can kill me physically, but I will have life, and my soul will rise and be with him in heaven. And eventually, when he comes back as judge, John 5, he will raise me too. John 5:28 and 29. Time is coming, Jesus said, when all who are in their graves will hear his voice. And those who have done good will rise to live. Those who have done evil will rise to be condemned, is what Jesus said. So they believed. They believed this stuff. And so this is why we can believe strongly, because the disciples weren't just creating something so that they could be popular. What they proclaimed meant they died and they were killed. And like I said, Peter is reported to have been killed upside down on a cross, blood flowing to his head as he suffocated in death. So firstly, we say believe strongly for all these reasons. One, so much God blesses those who are part of Jesus' kingdom. No one's seen the risen Jesus, so don't worry about that. Many don't believe, and that belief is a spiritual thing. You have to have life given to you by Jesus. And so understand that's why many haven't believed. And then also believe strongly because the disciples declare it for about 70 years and all lose their lives over it, except for John, who apparently died a natural death as an old man. Number two, here's the choice today for you and everyone else. Believe during life that Jesus is the Christ, the King over God's people, without seeing. Believe without seeing and be blessed. That's something you have over the apostles. You've believed without seeing. You're in this category of people that Jesus said you believed without seeing, so you're blessed. The apostles saw, and that was good. They believed, but they weren't in this blessed state that Jesus said. Blessed are those who see, or blessed are those who believe without seeing, as he says in verse 27 and 29. So A, in your outline there, couple of statements we make about this. One, Jesus is resurrected. He has ascended to heaven. And he will judge all people. Jesus refers to himself as the final judge in John 5:22 and 5:27 through 29. And so he will judge all people. The Father's not the judge. The Father's given all judgment to the Son, John 5:22, so that all would honor the Son, John 5:23. It's the Father's delight that those who rejected Jesus have to face him as their final judge. See the justice of that. But also that all who have rejected Jesus have to honor Jesus and have to declare Philippians 2 verses 9 through 11 that Bob read for us. They too have to declare at final judgment that Jesus is Lord and bow their knee to him. So Jesus is resurrected. He has ascended to heaven. We see that in Acts chapter 1 verse 9. The apostles, the same apostles who proclaimed Jesus' resurrection, also saw him ascend to heaven. Hebrews 1:3, the writer of Hebrews declares to us that Jesus, when he reaches heaven, sits down at the right hand of the Father. Now that's Hebrews 1:3. And then Jesus sits at final judgment when he returns again, Philippians 2:9-11, as the final judge. And as John would later report in Revelation 20, verses 11 through 15. So Jesus is resurrected, he has ascended to heaven, and he will judge all people, B, Thus, all will come to believe. Think about that. Everyone will come to believe these things are true. That Jesus was resurrected, that Jesus was ascended up to heaven, that Jesus was seated at God's right hand to be king and final judge, and that he would judge all people. All will come to believe this. That is in your outline there. We'll come to believe that Jesus is the resurrected king of God's people. But if they don't, that's your blank. If they don't believe this without seeing today, they will not be blessed. Jesus said, blessed are you who believe without seeing. But those who don't believe without seeing will be eternally cursed. The opposite of being eternally blessed. So see, but if a person comes to believe during this life without seeing, before they see it at the great white throne of Jesus at final judgment, Revelation 20, those who believe without seeing, those who believe during their life, they will be blessed eternally. They will be blessed eternally in the new heavens and new earth. So understand that. Everybody has a choice. Bow the knee to Jesus, the King and Judge, now, during life, and be blessed because you've believed without seeing. Or you'll believe anyway, but it'll be too late because you won't believe until you see. And when you see, you're being judged for your lack of belief, and for all the sins that you've done, for all the things written in the books, Revelation 20, verse 12. And so understand that about people. Not only are people not believing because they haven't been given sight, and let that calm you about your own faith and give you confidence about your own faith, but also be confident and be strong in your faith, because even when someone says you're a fool, they will later say, he was wise. She was wise. I should have been like her. I should have been like him. You will be justified in your belief in Jesus at final judgment. So know that the rejection, know that the scorn that you receive for believing in Jesus now, know that that scorn that might make you shrink back from believing or declaring Jesus as your king today, know that that's only temporary. Momentary light affliction, as Paul says, but that all will acknowledge, as John says in one of the letters, I forget which letter to which church it is, and in Revelation 2 and 3, that unbelievers will acknowledge you as the smart one because you believed that Jesus was the Christ during this life. So though we're seen as fools in this life, that will get flipped. That will get flipped at final judgment. So number three, be full of faith about Jesus being the risen from the dead King, the Christ. Be full of faith about Jesus being the risen from the dead King. Don't be doubting. Don't be lacking faith, but be full of faith. Be faithful in this belief, because those who believe have peace and joy. That's another thing John communicates to us here, and that God communicates to us through John today. Jesus had said to his followers this would be the case. And here in this passage, verse 19, Jesus comes among them and says, peace be with you. Peace be with you. He says it again in verse 26, peace be with you. And in verse 20, we see the response of believing, of knowing that Jesus is the resurrected King. The disciples were overjoyed. So we get peace and joy through knowing this. Now, how is it? There is a practical way that peace and joy come to us. And that's your A and your B here. We get peace and joy, A, by the Spirit. The Holy Spirit producing peace and joy in us. Galatians 5, 22 and 23. It's top three of the fruit of the Spirit. The fruit of the Spirit is love, joy, and peace. And so we get joy and peace because we believed in the unseen to us risen Jesus. And that's just supernatural work of the Spirit in us, giving us peace and joy in life. And those who haven't believed don't have God's Spirit, and so they don't have peace and joy in life, and so they experience anxiety in life. And when bad things happen to them in life, they have anxiety about that. What did I do wrong? And I don't know if there's anyone taking care of me, and I don't know if this is something worse there's something worse coming to me, right? Like Homer to Bart in the Simpsons movie, when Bart says, "This is the worst day of my life." And Homer leans down on one knee and pats Bart on the shoulder and says, "Son, it's only the worst day so far." And that's all the non-believer has. Simpson says so many things that are true in it. That's all the real hope a non-believer has. But not for us. God's Spirit gives us peace and joy. And that relates to number B, what we're talking about here. We not only have peace and joy because the Spirit produces that in us, in our souls, but we have peace and joy, B, by the knowledge that your King, victorious over death, is in heaven and is ruling. So you have peace and joy now in your life because you have knowledge that your King has been victorious over death. And he's in heaven now and is ruling over all things to protect and defend you and to work out all things for your best. So this is what we know. Jesus has risen from the dead. He's gone up at the right hand of God, ascended to the throne, Acts 1:9, sat down, Hebrews 1:3, and Ephesians 1:22 says that Jesus is ruling over all powers and principalities and authorities. This is language of the demonic. Jesus is over in his throne in heaven. He's over all those things for the sake of his church. Or as Romans 8:28 puts it, that he is King, sovereign over all events that occur on the earth, is sovereign over all events, working those events out for your good. For anyone he's called to himself, according to his purpose, his electing purpose, he's called those people to himself, and he's working all things out for your good. And this gives you peace and joy in life. When things happen to you that are unexpected, when your plan for what was going to happen doesn't happen and you get surprised and you're in a very different situation, you can have peace about that because you say, this was Jesus' plan for me, and Jesus is good and right in giving me this plan, even though it was wrought with hardships and it didn't go the way I expected. God got me into ministry by injuring me 3 years in college soccer. That wasn't my plan. That wasn't what people said of me in high school. It's not what my coach said of me when I was a freshman in college. You know, that my career would be that. But it was, but that turned my heart and my eyes toward the Lord and enabled me to spend time I would have spent practicing during those seasons and preparing Bible studies and doing evangelism on campus and that kind of thing. And that made me realize that I wanted to work on souls instead of teeth. And so God's plans, we don't always know what he's up to right then. A lot of times we know later, but we can have peace even before we understand why he's done that certain thing, why he caused us to go into all that inconvenience, or why he caused, our father or our mother to die when we were still a kid in school, When those things happen, we know God has a good purpose for us, and He was drawing out good things for us. And this is why Jesus had said earlier to His disciples in John 16:33, if you want to memorize a verse, this is a great one for you. "I have told you these things," He says to His disciples, "so that in Me you may have peace." Now, what had He told them? "I'm going to be crucified, and the world is going to hate you." That's what He's just told them. The world's going to hate Me, and I'm the master. If it hates the master, it hates the students. And you're the students. Sorry about that. He says, "I've told you these things, that in Me you may have peace. In this world you will have trouble, tribulation. But take courage." And here's our point in B. Take courage. Why take courage? Because you like being persecuted? Why take courage? Because you like things not going your way? No. Take courage because I have overcome the world. I have overcome death. I've risen to the right hand of the Father. And I sit above all rule and power and authority. And I work all things together for your good. And that gives us peace. That gives us peace like nothing else can. When hardship happens to us, when we get cancer, or when we, you know, we've got two people here in our congregation who went to colleges and it didn't work out and went to great inconvenience for that. You know, we can know, and they can know, you know, that Jesus was working something out. When my college soccer career was destroyed, through injury, and I hadn't been injury prone at all, despite the fact that I can't run without injury anymore, that God was working out something good for me, something much better for me, and you know, that I don't look back and say, what could I have done differently? No, that was just God's course for me. That was Jesus on His throne saying, this is how I'm going to get John from point A to point B. If you like me as a pastor, thank God for my injuries. Right? I thank him for my injuries and what that did for me. And for that, facing me with the fact that, I mean, I was in prosperity gospel when I went to college. I believed that stuff. And I was using that stuff so that I would have an even better college soccer career than I had had in high school. And God said, how can I get God out? Not that God has to wonder. How can I get John out of the prosperity gospel? I know. When he starts reading the Bible I was reading the Bible every day, going through the Bible through a year. And I did that my freshman year in college. I know how I'll do it, God says. I'll make him more faithful than he's ever been in his life, which I was my freshman year of college, more faithful than he's ever been in his life, and I'll destroy his soccer career. That will get him out of the prosperity gospel, because he will have to deal like I had to deal with. Being faithful does not equal earthly rewards in this life and everything going my way, zippity-doo-dah. Right? Sometimes when you're faithful, ask Jesus about this, it means you wind up on a cross. Sometimes when you're faithful, it means you're persecuted and you die for your faith, like these 10 disciples who saw Jesus. So we have peace and joy, even in our hardships, because we know our Jesus is resurrected from the dead, and not only that, ascended to the right hand of God, and ruling over all things, over all our circumstances, for our sake, out of His goodness and out of His love for us. And that gives us peace in our circumstances. And that gives us joy even when things don't work out in our lives. So conclusion. Be unwavering in your faith. Be unwavering in your faith that Jesus is the King. Remember, that's John's point. That's what he's showing us in this resurrection account. That Jesus is the Christ, the anointed King. Be unwavering in your faith that Jesus is the King, raised from the dead, protecting protecting you now and waiting to see you. That gives you peace and joy too. Should I even die for my faith? Here's the end result. Jesus is waiting to see me. And as I've been faithful, he'll say to me, "Well done, good and faithful servant." That'll be all right, huh? So no, be unwavering in your faith that Jesus is King, raised from the dead, protecting you now and waiting to see you. Know this, and know this belief is key in life and key in death for being blessed and having peace and joy. Let's pray.